I tell you what, though.
Houston, we have no problem.
We have had a problem here all day, man. Doug, have you run in? You saw all the issues we've had today. Do you ever have a day like that on a space station?
I was having flashbacks.
Were you?
So we had some major issues when I was up on the space station, and actually both times I was up there. First time in 2007, we had a torn solar array, and the solar arrays provide all of our power to the space station, and so we had a torn array, and so we had to figure out a way to sew it up, and so we actually made sutures. They kind of looked like cufflinks that had rotating flanges on the end of these cables, and we actually sewed up the solar array. And then when I was there in 2010, we had a major malfunction of the cooling system on the space station. And so, again, we had to do three emergency spacewalks to get that thing repaired. So I was just really glad that I wasn't in charge of, like, getting all the electrons flowing correctly today. So.
Well, you know, Doug, you're an aero engineer.
That's your degree, right.
But you've got to know a little about everything, right? You got to fix
you do.
You electricity.
Have to be kind of you have to be able to know a little bit about cooling systems, heat transfer, electricity, flow of power, and distribution of power, and things like that.
You left out plumbing.
Plumbing. I was on board for 6 months on board the space station in 2010, and we had a little plumbing problem with the potty on the space station. So I figured out pretty quickly that if you can fix the potty on a spacecraft,
you're the king.
You're the king of the universe. That's right.
That's true, man. Yeah. So. But you know, hey, I'm thinking back when you worked on the solar arrays. Mm-hmm. That is a lot of solar arrays out there. That's not any little piddly amount of electricity.
That's right.
That's some high current out there, man.
It's really high current. It's about 210 amps. Yes, you heard that correctly. And it's a 160 volt DC power that's running down those solar arrays, and so it can get your attention pretty quickly out there, so you have to be very careful working out around the solar arrays on the space station.
Yeah.
Okay. All of our power in the space station is gathered, collected from the sun.
We're probably going to get hot here.
Okay.
Probably going to get a little hot. They're saying.
So this will remind me of our thermal control.
Yeah.
This is when your
air conditioner went out, man. Now, that was a pretty long spacewalk for you, I think, when you did the swap out.
The first one was over 8 hours, which is normally we plan our spacewalks for about 6.5 hours, and that one lasted a little over 8 hours, and so we had ammonia that got onto our suits, and so we had to make sure that was baked off so we didn't bring it back inside the space station.
So how much air do you carry when you go out? How long could you stay out?
So interestingly, the leading consumable is we not only have to bring our own oxygen out to breathe, but we also have to scrub our exhalation. We have to scrub the carbon dioxide out of the out of our exhalation, and so we have a canister metal oxide, MEDOX we call it. It's in our backpack, and it's like a catalyst bed that our exhalation, our breath kind of runs over, and it pulls out the carbon dioxide, and that has a capacity. That's usually our limiting consumable, is the ability to scrub CO2.
I hate to do this again, but you know what I'm gonna have to do? I'm gonna have to turn that fan back on.
Okay.
It's getting really hot in here.
So I wonder if we could angle it to.
I don't know.
It doesn't blow right over
actually,
the mic.
Some, you know, let's go to low and see. John, you just adjusted. No, I don't really want to. So some people are saying they're hearing wind noise, and some people are saying it sounds good. So you know how it goes.
Sounds like a helicopter. This is what I'm supposed to say. What's that you say?
Yeah.
Listening to flying a helicopter.
All right. Well, we'll get this back on track. So you've got some bad days on the space station, and a lot of things go wrong. And do you ever really, now you're trained and you're ready for this. You don't ever panic, right? Everything, you know, just keep your calm and we'll work through this.
It's very interesting you say that, because most everything, we try to train for any kind of contingency on the space station, anything that could go wrong, but the space always seems to surprise us. And so we kind of have a joke running on board the space station that step one of any procedure is don't panic. It's always good to have that as a first step.
Well, that's a good saying. You've got a lot of sayings on here. Like, what's the saying about your coffee?
Yeah, so we recycle everything on board the space station. All of our water. We recycle our air, of course. We rebreathe oxygen that's been pulled from water and also from our carbon dioxide that we exhale as well. And so we have a saying on board the space station as well that yesterday's coffee is tomorrow's coffee. So let that sink in. Talk amongst yourselves. Discuss.
I asked, of course, he's passed on now, but I asked Owen Garriott about that a few years ago. Owen, of course, is a scientist, and I was trying to make a joke with him. You know, Owen, how do you know if that thing's not working right, that, you know, that filter? And boy, he gave me seven steps of what you guys do to make sure it's drinkable, you know. He really went through it there. So, you know, a lot of the people in here and a lot of people that came by here know you as a person they worked by ham radio when you went up. And you really, there's just been a few hams that really spent a lot of time on here, and you did.
I did. It became a pastime for me, really. Before I went, I was going to be the commander of the space station, and I was going to be up there for 6 months. And so they asked me early on, they said, would you like to get your ham radio license? And I said, I actually, at that time, I didn't know there was a ham radio in the station. They said, oh yeah, we have a ham radio, and we use it for emergency communication if in fact the space station is tumbling and we can't point our antennas to the satellites. We have line of sight to the Earth through a ham radio. And so I said, well, since I'm going to be commander, I want to make sure I have the capability to use any kind of source of comm. So I went through the training and took my entry-level kind of certification in the ham radio, got my license, got to the space station. I was there for maybe a week and a half, and I thought to myself, I should go pick up that ham radio and see if I can raise anybody down there in the Earth on that blue planet.
So you're fixing to make your very first contact now, aren't you?
That's right.
First contacts are always very memorable, you know?
Absolutely. So we were coming over, as I remember, it was a descending, what we call a descending node. The space station is in a 51.6 degree orbit inclination to the equator. So we're orbiting the Earth kind of, you're looking at the Earth like a beach ball. You take a hula hoop, you turn it up about 51.6 degrees from the equator. And so we orbit the Earth that way. And of course the Earth is rotating as well. So we actually map out most of the inhabitable part of the Earth. And so we had a descending node coming in the US airspace around Seattle and kind of coming out down around Houston. And so I thought I should just pick up that radio and see if I can reach anybody. And I put a YouTube together because when I had my notepad and I just said any station, International Space Station, and it was like a barrage of hundreds of calls coming up. It was kind of like an alphabet soup, and I couldn't really pick up any one call sign, whole call sign. So I was kind of frozen in my
first contacts kind of, do that to you.
Yeah, I was kind of frozen. I didn't know, because I would hear numbers and different voices, but
were you surprised that there were so many people wanting to talk to you?
I was shocked, and so I made that pass. I don't think I made one contact because I didn't know what I was doing, and so I called down to Houston once we got out of the airspace, and I talked to the guy that instructed me in ham radio, and he said all you need to do is pick out a couple of letters or numbers or a location, or some people use kind of funny phonetics with the alphabet, with the alphanumeric in their call sign. see if you could just pick out a piece of that and respond to that. And the ham radio community, I found, was extremely cordial. Mm-hmm. And so when I would pick out something, I'd hear just a bit, I would respond back to that. Everyone else would be silent, and that person would call me back. And so then we can make the full connection. Yeah. And then I'd open it up for others, and I'd call out a location. Or I heard Juliet 5 over, you know, can say again, and they would come back with that. So it was a great, great fun. But it took a little bit of learning to how to make a proper contact.
Yeah, I'm looking at the comments here. I think that's probably Rick in Memphis, WA4NVM, is just reminding you your license is expiring.
Yes.
In June of 6th.
June 6th, I think,
so we've got to get that renewed, and we've already talked about how to do that. And you're talking about unique names with phonetics, you know. I mean, in the military, there's certain standard phonetics you would use, you know. But sometimes catchy ones will catch you. For instance, I have a friend in Memphis that contacted you. WA4, Hot Friday Night.
Hot Friday Night, I remember that.
And when you heard that, that's all you heard, Hot Friday Night,
that's
right?
That's right. I heard all this alphanumeric coming up, and I heard somebody say Hot Friday Night, so that caught my attention. And I remember a gentleman in Jonesboro, Arkansas, that called me, and I'm trying to think what he, I think it was Eddie, I think,
is
his name.
Yep.
And I remember him saying, International Spaceship, this is Eddie from Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Okay.
And so it didn't have any alphanumeric in there, but I heard Eddie from Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Eddie, if you're out there listening, cool. Great to talk to you again.
Well, you know, I mean, it was amazing, Doug. I've been a ham for 55 years, and a number of years ago, I got interested in satellite and IS. So I try to work in the IS, you know, and people probably experience the same thing I do. You're not on all the time. Sometimes you're not ever on, but I tried for about a year. I never got them. And then when you got up there and I made a contact, it was like I couldn't miss. I talked to you 30 times that month. And I talked to you. I talked to you three times driving home from the truck. So after that, I said, I've done enough. Let's let other people do it. And I haven't been back on the satellite or the IS since then. But that last conversation I had with you, I think you were coming down, I think, just within a couple of days, and that's when we sent you to barbecue. And
that's right.
I was afraid that they wouldn't let you eat that barbecue, you know, because it might be poisoned or something.
I had been in Memphis a handful of times in my life. I just remembered Corky's barbecue there. So we have a different kind of barbecue in Texas, and I know that North Carolina has their brand of barbecue. And so I remember talking to Tom when I was on the station. He told me he's from Memphis, and so I said, do you ever have that Corky's barbecue? He said, of course. And so he had it sent to Houston, and where we go into quarantine once we first get home. And so I landed in Kazakhstan. We flew all the way back to Houston, and I went into my room, and they said, hey, there's a package here from Memphis, and it was Corky's barbecue. So my first meal back on Earth was barbecue.
Well, let me tell you, there was kind of a sinister reason for doing that when I asked you that, and I'm sure some of the Memphis guys are on here. In working satellite, there's a lot of satellite operators in Kansas City, and they were competing with the guys in Memphis, and they said they had better barbecue in Memphis. Memphis says we have better barbecue. So we decided if we could get someone from the heavens to acknowledge who had the best barbecue, we would win the bet.
Well, you know, I'm not allowed to endorse.
I know you're not.
I have to be like Switzerland. I have to be neutral on this. And I have to tell you that I have, I think I've tried barbecue from most every place, and it's all good to me.
All right. Well, you know what? And since you can't endorse, but I will say Doug did come to Memphis a couple years ago to go to St. Jude. He stayed at a home one night, and I took him to this barbecue place. I won't give the name now. And Doug signed a nice picture and said the best barbecue on or off, I think,
on or off the planet, I think.
And let me tell you, they put that right next to Elvis Presley's picture in the restaurant there.
That's awesome.
All right, we'll see you. We'll see you.
That's awesome.
I didn't bring you. Maybe tomorrow. So that was kind of neat there. So we've had a lot of fun over the years with things like that, and you've really touched people's lives just in talking to them, signing autographs, getting on a show with us. Yeah. This is the seventh year Doug has been with us, and we are planning, we talked at lunch earlier, we're planning to try to get Doug down to Huntsville, get Doug into Huntsville in August. And NASA's having a big anniversary celebration in Huntsville, so if you want to come to Huntsville Hamfest, you can also go out to the Space Center and see a lot of space stuff out there.
Lots of great stuff there, and the Space and Rocket Center is there as well, where a lot of our kids go to space camp, and there's great museum pieces out there. They have a Saturn V rocket that's there as well. So,
you know, I need to scroll through here and try to pick out some questions. One question from Renee is, have you ever seen a hurricane from space?
Yes, I have. In fact, I know that I tweeted a couple of pictures. If you're on Twitter, first of all, on Twitter, I'm Astro_Wheels. So I wish they called me Wheels because I was a fast runner or something, but because my last name is Wheelock. But if you look me up on Twitter, I know I've tweeted some pictures of hurricanes from space, or just put it in a search engine, Doug Wheelock hurricane photos from space. I'm sure you'll be able to find it.
Here's like in KN4NBE Colonel, your time in orbit, how much did the overfly effect change your view of the world?
Yeah, so I was amazed, you know, when I was a kid, I had my favorite planet was Pluto, of course, then they downgraded it.
Yeah, not a planet anymore.
That's right. And so, but it didn't take me long, just a couple of days in space, looking out at our beautiful planet. The Earth is now my favorite planet. And so, it really kind of changes your perspective on how fragile we are, just kind of hanging in the balance in the vastness of space. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful planet that we live on. In fact, I thought to myself, had I grown up on Mars or something and been able to have a telescope and look and see this beautiful blue planet, how much more vivid my dreams would be to go to that place, our home planet Earth, than some other planet that I looked at when I was a kid up in upstate New York.
We've got a person in the UK, M3XPY. Doug, will you say hello to my grandchildren?
Alana and Amelia from Sunderland. Very nice to meet you guys.
Down the road from Northumberland.
Okay. Which I believe you have been there. I think I have been there. So, hello to your grandchildren, Alana and Amelia.
I'll see.
And
Let's talk about the food, man.
Yeah,
that looks delicious.
I actually brought my own lunch today.
That looks delicious.
So here's
can you zoom in on this?
Oatmeal with brown sugar. I was going to have this for breakfast, and then figured out this is actually space food, and that I actually brought back from space with me because I didn't eat it up there. But this is shrimp fried rice. So that's kind of what our food looks like in space. And so it's dehydrated in these packets, and we add hot or cold water and just kind of mix it up, let it rehydrate for about 10 minutes or so, and then you cut the plastic open and then you eat it, and it kind of tastes like warm or cold plastic, actually.
Yeah.
So not real super tasty, but that's what our food looks like. This is actually cornbread dressing.
I love cornbread dressing. I love it, man. But that does not look that appetizing.
So I actually landed on Thanksgiving Day in 2010, and so it was actually Thanksgiving Day in the U.S. And so just before I got into our Soyuz to come back home, I had a packet of mashed potatoes and a packet of cornbread dressing for my Thanksgiving dinner before I came back to the planet.
Now, does that expand a little bit? It gets a little bit larger when you put the water
in? It does. And so you inject the water and it kind of puffs up a little bit, and you just kind of break it up and let it soak up the water. And then, of course, when we have, this happens to be an orange pineapple drink, but we drink our, you can feel the powder in here. We just inject water into here and mix it around. And of course, we have bags of coffee, and we actually have bags that say water on them. So it's actually dehydrated water. You just add water. It's actually just an empty bag, and so we fill that up with a water spout. And we have this special straw in space that has a locking mechanism on it. And so, because when you start sucking out of a straw, if you just pull it out of your mouth, it just comes out like a siphon because there's no gravity to pull it back into the bag. So a very important feature on here that you have the straw locked, you put the straw in your mouth, you unlock it, drink what you want to drink, lock it, and make sure all the liquid is out of this top part of the straw so it doesn't go floating around the space station.
Now, if that water came out, would it be in little balls floating around?
Yeah, it would float around.
Can you kind of capture them?
You can. It's got high surface tension, so it kind of usually glums together in a big ball. And it's kind of like slime, like on Nickelodeon when they get slime.
Yeah.
When you can put your finger in there and it kind of like grabs onto the surface tension is so high that it just grabs onto whatever you put in there. So, if a ball of water is floating around the space station, you could just stick a straw inside of it and drink it.
Suck it up, man. Yeah. Now, is there any danger of water floating around like that, getting into equipment and things like that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, we have lots of laptops that are running on the space station. So, of course, we have to be very careful with the water because when it comes in contact with the wall or a computer or something, it just kind of sticks to it like slime, you know. So, have to be really careful. It could short out equipment and things. So,
can you drink milk in space?
You can.
Do you carry? Do you have any milk up there?
We had dehydrated milk. We just added water to it. And I see one from Binghamton. Speedies, I'd never had. Hey, Mike from Johnson City. AB4 Charlie Hotel from Johnson City. I didn't have Speedies from Binghamton up there on the space station, but as soon as I could, when I got home, I rushed to get I believe it was Lupo's was my first Speedies back on Earth.
Hey, let's talk about air leaks, man. Didn't they have an air leak recently and the astronaut just sealed it with her finger, you know, like the kid plugging the dike, you know, with a finger?
Yeah, we had a leak on one of our Soyuz vehicles not long ago, and I think it was at the beginning of this year or the end of last year, and so we have an ultrasonic leak detection system, so our sensors will pick up a slight decrease in pressure. Your ears are also very sensitive, so if there's more than just a little bit of an air leak, your ears will feel it first, like almost like when you're riding in an elevator, you go up with several floors and your ears kind of pop a little bit. You can feel that on the station as well. But we also have, it kind of looks like a metal detector you see people with. We have a headset and a wand.
You can hear it, I guess, right?
You can hear it this ultrasonic leak detection. So once we find it, then we have a leak patch, a patch kit that we can actually patch up leaky holes on the station.
That's really cool. Yeah. Now, I'm always worried about you. How do you know you have enough oxygen up here, man? Do you bring it up
We do have tanks of oxygen outside the space station. The atmosphere inside is much like we have on here on Earth. We keep the pressure about 14.7 psi, which is what we feel here on the surface of the Earth, and we can vary that. And we also keep the air composition about 80% nitrogen and about 20% oxygen, like we have down here as well. And so we have tanks. We have both nitrogen tanks and oxygen tanks that are filled and on the outside of the space station that we could draw oxygen off of. We also have a machine on board the space station, and it's called an Electron, and we can pump water into it. It takes the hydrogen off, and we can use that hydrogen as fuel, takes the oxygen and pumps it back into the cabin. So like your sweat from yesterday might be the oxygen you're breathing tomorrow. So it's pretty amazing.
Question here from, I forget who it was, out west. How do you protect yourself from radiation? And I don't know if gamma rays are called radiation, but they'll go through about anything, won't
they?
Yes,
they will. And we have our sleep stations on the space station. We have some shielding on the outside of the space station, and our sleep stations are actually lined with radiation bricks, protective bricks that we have around. So while you're sleeping, there's quite a bit more radiation protection. But we get a pretty high dosage on the space station. And so in some people, you're exactly right, Tom, that the gamma radiation, just high energy particles, just go right through the space station, go right through our bodies. And
you get your eyes closed? Can you see them? Can you see one go past?
I never saw flashes, but some people have reported like light flashes while their eyes are closed.
Yeah.
It's almost like a particle hitting the optic nerve. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, I'd never experienced that, but I did experience vision impairment when I got back to Earth as well.
How thick is the wall on the ISS?
Not very thick at all. You'd be surprised at how thin it is.
I would imagine because of the weight. I mean, that's a lot of weight up there you have to take up.
Exactly. And on not only the hull, I mean, the hull has got, but it's millimeters of thickness. It's not
really
several inches of what you'd want, you know, but so it's just a few millimeters of thickness. But then on the outside of the space station, we also have a protective, we call it MMOD. It's micrometeor object. It's shielding that we used for micrometeor debris, orbital debris. And so we put that shielding on the outside of the space station as well. In some areas, we actually have blankets as well that are like a Kevlar kind of material that provides some additional cushion to high energy particles.
So another question, what man-made type things can you see from space?
So you can see...
can you see buildings like in New York or anything?
Yeah, you can. The cities, we do have lots of cameras with lenses.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these photos that you see coming back on Twitter or something, you know, that the astronauts send out, they're with big zoom lenses. But with the naked eye, you can make out cities just as a discoloration from space. So the concrete jungle, we say, you know, the metal and concrete of a major city just kind of appears gray on the landscape from space. And so you could see the blue of the water and the green of the forest. And you could actually see fall, autumn colors in the trees and everything from space. And so man-made stuff, you could see like linear features like roads and things like that. So,
cool.
You need a zoom lens or a telescope or binoculars to be able to make out fine detail.
Where does the human waste go? I know you don't just put it out a pipe out into space, right?
We don't. We don't dump it into space, but we take, first of all, let's say number one, we actually, I made a joke earlier on that yesterday's coffee is tomorrow's coffee.
That's
true on the space station. That's number one, right?
Oh,
but number two.
Oh, yeah, number two.
Did I get that right?
I got it right. I'm sure you get it right.
So the other waste, including our trash, we pack inside of these vehicles, resupply vehicles that come up, and when they go home, they have no heat shield, so they burn up in the atmosphere. And so we burn up all of our trash. It burns up and upon reentry, and nothing left of it when it comes back to Earth.
Let's talk a minute about launching these CubeSats. You know, ham radio operators, we have some satellites that actually go around the Earth, in addition to the space station that we operate through. And they're little CubeSats. They're about the size of a softball, very small. I guess they're taking up different platforms, whatever. But I think the space station also maybe launches some at some time. Do I have like a gun or a chute or something that spring loaded?
It's kind of like a tube launcher. It really is. It's we have a like a launching system that kind of kicks it out with a series of springs. It's like a spring that kind of kicks it out, and we make sure we get it at the right angle to get it in the orbit we want it, and it doesn't hit something else on the space station. So we do kind of aim that, and then we send a launch command. Sometimes the commands are pre-programmed, and then those launch out. It's kind of spring-loaded.
Okay. Let's see. You know, there have been different. It's been like a roller coaster. A lot of ham radio operation from the space station. and then maybe none for a while. I guess it depends on the crew and what they want to do.
That's
and
true.
And you do this in your spare time. You do it That's in your right. off time.
That's right. And we do have scheduled contacts with scouting clubs.
And schools.
Schools and things like that. Any kind of like educational outreach. We do have those scripted contacts. Otherwise, the use of the ham radio is really in the free time that you have.
Right.
So post-sleep, pre-sleep, and then during the weekends. And so I would, whenever my work was done, that's when, if we were passing over the U.S. and I didn't answer, it's because it's probably during the working day on the space station. In fact, on the space station, we work the crew according to GMT, which some folks call Zulu time, but it's Greenwich Mean Time. And so the crew gets up at 6 o'clock Greenwich and goes to work at about 7:30 Greenwich. And so when you can calculate, those are the times that they would be able to get on the radio in the morning. And then just before, the time that I love the most was what we call pre-sleep, when we're done with our work, we're done with our dinner, with our working out, and I would have a couple of hours that I would, some people would write, some people would call home, and I'd do that as well. I would go to the ham radio, especially if I had a good pass over the U.S. or over Europe or Australia were my best contacts. So.
Doug, do you, looking out the window, do you ever see any debris floating by?
I never saw any debris, yeah. And most of it is, we're traveling so fast, we're orbiting the Earth about a mile, 5 seconds, 5 miles per second.
Yeah.
So it's pretty quick, 17,500 miles per hour, so we're traveling pretty quick, so the chances of seeing anything, unless it was floating outside going the same velocities that we were going.
There's a lot of stuff floating around out
there's
there.
There's a lot of space junk.
I worry about that. Is it either above you or below you?
Well, we try to track what we can, but some small particles we're not able to track. If we can see it, and it looks like, we call it a conjunction and mission control, and so if we see that we're gonna have a conjunction, we could turn the space station to make it a smaller profile, mm-hmm. you know, into the direction of the object is coming from to get as small as possible. We could do that. We can also raise and lower the orbit of the space station, and we can have what's called a PDAM, which is a preliminary debris avoidance maneuver. So we could plan out a maneuver of the space station to avoid any debris that we see coming toward it. So
I guess GPS doesn't work very well up here, does it?
GPS actually, it works well for us. It works well, you know, early on.
Yeah.
It wasn't so good because we were traveling so fast. but now we're really kind of mastering the GPS on board, and it's very, very useful
Basically
us.
The same GPS we use here?
Similar, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Similar, yep.
You know, I saw where one of the phone companies had just got approval from the FCC to launch something like 2,000 satellites, low orbit, for the new 5G or cell phones or something. They'll be low orbit. Now, I don't know how low. You guys are, your orbit's about, what, a couple hundred?
A couple hundred miles, 200 to 250 miles. And so we're considered in LEO, which is low Earth orbit as well.
Uh-huh.
So.
Okay. Here's a question. I know I've seen a lot of pilots can't answer or shouldn't answer because it gets them grounded and sent to the loony house, right? But have you ever seen a UFO? Now, a UFO, I go, that's just
I could neither confirm or deny that. I never did, but I'll have to tell you a funny story on my very first spacewalk. Because I was being out on a spacewalk, you have this visor that gives you just a panoramic view of just outer space, and so you're just beyond that visor is the vacuum of space. And I remember the sun had, we'd gone into eclipse, and so it was darkness, and I could see some lights on the Earth, of course, and I was on the top part of the space station truss, and I saw like a flash of light out of the corner of my eye, and I thought to myself, if I look over there and there's an alien there, I'm gonna freak out, which is step one. You don't freak out.
Don't freak out, right?
So I looked over there, and what it was a shooting star, a meteor, going through our atmosphere below my feet, and I could see that it kind of careening in through our atmosphere, leaving what looked like a stardust trail behind it. And it was amazing. It was really bright, and seeing it underneath you is quite an amazing experience as well.
So talking about seeing lights and things on Earth, North Korea, they have almost no lights. Do you notice that when you're flying? You can, South Korea should be lit up like a Christmas tree. In the north, it's very dark. Can you tell the difference?
You do see areas, and you also see the difference in colors of lights as well. You could see at night, you could see clearly the shorelines, of course. You could pick out, in fact, when you could pick out a particular country, let's use like Italy, the country of Italy. So it kind of looks like a boot when you look at it on a map, and from space, you could see the outline of the shoreline. It just looks like
maybe the Rock of Gibraltar or something.
The Iberian Peninsula by Portugal and Spain, and down by Gibraltar is very well lit along the coastline. Of course, the oceans are dark, you know, at night mostly, and you could also see mountain ranges. Another interesting feature that I noticed is Mount Vesuvius, right around the city of Naples in Italy. That's, of course, the volcano that erupted that buried the ancient city of Pompeii. And you could see very clearly from space the outline of all of our towns and villages. And then there's this big open dark spot, a round circle, and it's the dormant volcano of Vesuvius. And so it's pretty interesting. I looked, I thought, like, gosh, we built awful close to that dormant volcano. But you could really see the boundaries where we live and where the water is outlined in our lights of our cities and towns. So.
I want to jump on another subject just for a second and just let everybody out there know, and we've got video of this. Doug launched one of our balloons today, W5KUB-3. If you go to our website, W5KUB-3, click balloon, there's a link there you can track our balloons. Although that's tracking our balloon number two, which is over the Western Sahara right now. We launched balloon three today, so you can go up in APRS and change the -2 to -3. Hey, John, can you give us a location where we are right now? Where are we? Where?
We're a few miles east of Columbus.
Okay. All right. We're at 27,000 feet, but we're only traveling 23 miles an hour. Guys, you ought to watch this. All right, let me tell you about this guy right here. We picked him to launch because he has the experience. So we get out there to launch.
There's a lot of pressure.
It's pressure me. So Doug launches our balloon, and this thing has a very slow takeoff, right? Plus, we had about a 30-mile-an-hour wind going sideways. So Doug lets it go, and it hangs up on a trailer out there. So we go get the balloon, and then we bring it back. And Bill, WBAELK, who's the master of all high-altitude balloons, gives us a little bit more instructions. He says, Doug, you got to run with it. So Doug has the balloon, and he's running with it, and then he lets it go. And it's just slowly moving, and boy, the wind's taking it out this way. And what did we hit first? I mean,
it started to dip, and we're like, oh no.
And then it went almost straight up.
Almost went straight up, and then it hit a power line.
Yeah, it wrapped around a power line,
but then it dragged it over the top, and it went. So.
Yeah, and so we're up at 27,000 feet now. We're traveling at 23 miles an hour. And if Doug, if you'd ran just a couple miles an hour faster.
Just east of Columbus, Ohio. So. Yeah. OH to all my Ohio
that's right.
Ohio State fans.
So go to APRS.fi and you can put in W5KUB-3 and you can see the balloon that Doug launched. we're going to attempt to make it all the way around the world with this balloon. And we think we'll have good luck because we had an astronaut launch it. So
yeah,
that's the deal.
There's a little bit of drama getting it launched, but we got it up in the air and it's gone now. So we had a lot of fun
with that. You know, there's some weird questions coming in here. And since we're not FCC, I guess we can cover this.
Be nice for this.
We can cover this question.
Okay.
If we were on prime time, kids, they moon, might not. Somebody said, what if somebody passes gas in the space station? Does that cause any problem, or does that kind of get cycled and cleared up pretty quick?
Again, I could neither confirm or deny.
I understand that. Yeah, okay. Let's see what we got here.
But I will say that we... we don't have a lot of changes of clothing on board, and so you just kind of wear your clothes until they're getting kind of smelly, and then we put them away in the trash bags.
Yeah.
And
but I'm sure all that odor is recycled somehow, where you can breathe it again the next day.
Yeah,
but it's clean.
I miss the smells of the earth, to be honest with you, when I was up there. So,
well, that's one of the things you comment about when you landed November 28th.
That's right. It was
you commented about smelling grass. Now, can you smell that before you open the hatch?
After we opened the hatch, we actually landed in Kazakhstan. We land on land in the Russian Soyuz under chutes, and there was a little bit of snow, and we land in the Kazakh steppe. So we bounced, we dug up a big divot of dirt, and then we rolled over, and so we dug up a bunch of dirt. And there's, of course, a lot of grass there and water. And so when they popped that hatch open, the sweet smell of the earth kind of came flooding in. And it made you realize at that moment, because we don't have a shower on the space station, it had been 6 months since I had taken a shower. And so when that sweet smell of the earth came rolling in, I was like, wow, we must smell really bad. I said to my crewmates,
you know, I watched you guys. They carried you out and put you in these chairs. You know, that was kind of interesting. You looked like you recovered better than the other two. The lady, was it Sharon or what was her
Shannon.
Name? Shannon. Yeah. And then the Russian guy was with you, I think.
Fyodor Yurchikhin.
Fyodor. You really look good. Shannon looked like it affected her more. I don't know. How long does it take you to really walk, you know?
Well, everybody's affected in some way or another. And some things come back quickly. Some things, my eyes were damaged, which I didn't expect. And that was more of a lasting kind of permanent damage to my eyesight, which I wasn't really expecting. But it helped us in the process of trying to determine how we're going to take care of our humans, and if we're going to send them to Mars to be on the surface of Mars, it's going to take several months to get there, several months to get home, and so we need to be able to take care of our astronauts as well. So everybody's different, a little bit different in those respects.
I'm hearing that it's not many years before we go to Mars. Is there any estimated date?
Yeah, so, we're going to be back on the moon. Now, we had, just in the last couple of weeks, we have the charge now, and the mission boots back on the moon in 2024. So, just 5 years away from landing boots back on the moon.
So, would you like to do that, Doug? Would you actually go to the moon?
I'd love to do that. But I know that all my other astronaut buddies would probably love that as well.
Yeah.
So, as long as I could be involved in the in the planning and getting things ready and the training and all that, it's more of a team effort for us at NASA. So it'll be just great to see humans back on the moon. And of course, I would love to do that, but also would love to see us get back there safely as well and safely back home.
Hey,
I did want to say about the reentry. If you're on Twitter, my Twitter handle is astro_wheels. And just last weekend on Mother's Day, I put a tweet out there with a picture because when I was coming back home in the Soyuz, my mom was so worried. I called her from the space station. She said, I'm so scared about this reentry in the Soyuz. How will I know you're okay? And she said, kid, is there some sort of sign you can give me to let me know that you're okay?
You're okay?
So.
Yeah.
and I made a sign for my mom, and so you'll have to go to Twitter, Astro_wheels, and there's a picture on there of the sign that I sent my mom.
I think it said, hi, Mom. That was a cool sign. Guess who's on here? There's a person on here named Kelly and a Kelly puppy, or what was it? Let me look back up here.
Oh, here we go.
puppy Wheels.
Just passing on a quick hello to Wheels from Mrs. Wheels and Puppy Wheels. It's great to see you guys. Thank you.
Who is Puppy Wheels?
That's Little Lily. We had a big hurricane in come through South Texas. It was Hurricane Harvey in 2017. It was in August of 2017, and so we rescued Lily. Lily was abandoned in the city of Beaumont from after that hurricane, and so we rescued Lily, and in a way she sort of rescued us as well. So now she's part of our family, and so she's up in Medina, Ohio, up near Cleveland, waiting for me to get back home to do a squirrel hunt. I go on walks with Lily, but she considers them squirrel hunts. So she likes to hunt the squirrels.
You know, I don't think anybody from NASA is probably watching right now, and I've nailed Doug down on this a couple of times. We're planning a special live show from the space station, and Doug has agreed that when he gets up here again, on our show, we'll have the first live ham radio show from space. Now
they'll send me back, so that way
they'll send you back, right?
It was kind of a contract where it's like, now I have you contact NASA and say like, hey, we got to get this guy back up there. So if I get back up there, I'm gonna beat my old record in 2010 for the number of contacts.
Man, you made a lot of contacts, lots of contacts there. Oh, let's see, man. What else should we talk? Any other questions we missed here in the chat room? Oh, how do you brush your teeth?
Yes. So water is kind of floating around. So what we do we don't have a shower. So what we do to kind of bathe, we have a washcloth and a towel, and I put a little bit of like a bag of water like this. Just kind of squeeze it into that washcloth, kind of mash it in. Then we have rinseless soap and shampoo, and we just kind of take a towel bath up there. And so, and to brush our teeth, we actually use a towel as well, and normal toothpaste. I'd get a little bit of water, and I'd put it on my toothbrush. I brush my teeth, and then kind of, you can either spit the toothpaste out. I'm not particularly fond of toothpaste, but in space, you can either spit it into the towel, or you can swallow it and just wash it down with water. And so,
well, you think NASA would figure out a way to make it a food where you can swallow it? That would save a couple. Maybe turn that in as a suggestion.
That's a suggestion.
Yeah.
Make it taste like pizza or something.
Have some calories in it, and where you swallow it, and it becomes food and toothpaste. So, and a lot of things that are developed from space actually become products on Earth. So
absolutely,
we're looking forward to having edible food toothpaste down here someday.
I know for our little dog Lily, we have peanut butter flavored toothpaste, so maybe we should take that to the space station as well. A little more palatable.
Do we have any idea what the expected life expectancy is of the IS? I know it's getting old.
We've extended the life of the station, and it's still going strong, but we are seeing, it's just like any other piece of hardware, a car or an old truck or something, things start wearing out, there have been some things on the space station that have really surprised us and how long it's lasted. Some things were designed to last 5 years, and they've lasted 15 years, and still going, so we're actually learning a lot by the space station aging as well. We're learning a lot about systems, how we can optimize our systems in space. And so it's actually a very good thing. Right now we're extended to 2024, 2025 on the life of the station. We're anticipating it extended beyond that. And I would say in the next couple of years, be looking for them to officially extend the station probably out to 2028, maybe even 2030, as we make these different upgrades. And because when things break, we just it's not just replacing the item. We actually learn in strength of materials, how to design better pumps, you know, better stronger materials and more reliable hardware as well. So it's actually helping our engineering and manufacturing here on Earth as well.
Well, I think it can last a long time. You look at our aircraft like our B-52s have been around for many years. You just keep kind of upgrading and
that's right.
And you know, they'll keep serving us.
Absolutely.
Oh, let's see. Have you? Any Wilson? No. I saw something about earlier. Have you ever worn a kilt? I think there's a joke here. How about wearing a kilt in zero gravity? Oh. That might be bad.
Yeah, if you're doing it properly, that would not be a good look for me, probably.
Oh, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't want to be on camera wearing that kilt, I don't think.
Have you ever snuck anything? Well, you probably can't deny or
I can neither confirm nor deny.
One of the Gemini astronauts maybe snuck a salami sandwich on board.
Yeah, it was a corned beef sandwich. It was John Young.
And is that right?
Of course, he got in trouble, but then he walked on the moon.
Yeah, what are you gonna do?
Apollo 16. So
what are you gonna do? If somebody walks on the moon, man. He took a sandwich with you. You're gonna.
That's right.
Fire him? I mean, you know, I don't think so.
And then John Young was the commander of the very first space shuttle mission as well.
Yeah. And you know, talking about ham radio, Owen Gary was the first ham to take ham radio into space. He took it up in the space shuttle. I remember the day he went up with it. I actually heard him. I was unable to work him. But back then, we had a NASA channel on cable that actually showed the plot of the space station. Or the shuttle and everything, and I could see it. I mean, it came over like Houston, and I started hearing him. And of course, I had a vertical antenna. Vertical antenna is good for, you know, anything perpendicular to it. It's not good off the top.
Yeah.
So I heard him calling from Houston up. He came to Memphis, and then I lost him. He was right over us, and then he went on over New York, and I heard him, and that was it. But he carried the first radio.
That's cool.
And since then, through various programs, of course, the ham radio has been installed now on the space station.
Right.
They want me to taste some of the food. I won't taste it. No.
You sure you don't want to? Are you hungry? That's shrimp fried rice.
No,
or here we got oat cereal. So.
You know, I mean, you know, chicken and dressing is one of my favorite meals, but I don't know.
I think you asked about milk.
Yeah, is that milk?
There's cereal with milk on it, so I don't know if you can
cereal.
You can see that. That's comes with its own powdered milk there. So
okay, cereal. What's the blue dots mean?
So the blue dots are actually
Velcro.
Velcro.
Yeah, I see
everything's
that now.
Floating around in space, and so we have Velcro everywhere on the space station. So you can put your Velcro. We actually wear shorts and trousers that have Velcro strips on them, so you can put your lunch on your leg or on the wall.
It's actually sticking to me. Look at there.
Yeah, there you go.
It'll stick here. All right. Well, guys, hey, I know that everybody's getting interested in Hambot. They're wanting some more prizes to give out. Doug, you can meet and talk to some more people, and we want you to also give some prizes out with Hambot with Kathy.
Okay, so I can do that.
We're gonna go ahead and we'll go ahead and terminate this little talk we had, and
it's
been
nice
very,
talking,
very
everybody.
Enjoyable. Yeah. Alana and Amelia have a signed photo from you. Oh, no, they wanted a signed photo. I will pay the postage. I'm good on QRZ. I tell you what. Well,
you don't have to.
Well, we might open this up to 5,000 people here. Let's see. Who is that? M3XPY, just contact me in email. Contact me in email, and we'll talk about seeing about getting you something there.
Absolutely.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a break here. And
I'll take care of the postage, by the way.
We're going to get back to everything here and give some prizes away and have a good time.
Thank you, guys. 73 to everybody, and thanks for inviting me back to Hamvention. It's great being here.
Oh, and for you guys didn't know, Doug is retired now from the Army. Colonel Doug is retired, no more Army.
No,
but you'll
no
still
more
be,
Army. I still kind of Yeah. I guess you can never get all the army out of.
Oh yeah.
You can take the guy out of the army, but you can't take the army out of the guy.
That's right. So, and I didn't feel like it about the Air Force. I was not a lifer like you. You know, I was in for a little over 4 years, and I love the military, and man, I can't say enough about them.
You know, it's Armed Forces Day today as well, so for everybody out there that served or has a family member that served or knows somebody that's serving, reach out to them and let them know. I'm reaching out to you guys to let you know how much I appreciate your service. I know the time and sacrifice that goes into that, and so thank you for your service, whichever service. Even though we give I'm an Army guy, so I have
these are Army
wings, and so we always tell our Air Force brethren they're really the Army Air Corps, and so
that's right.
So thank you for your service in the Army Air Corps.
We used to be together at one time, didn't we?
That's right.
I see another thing here. I can't, let's see, Kelly, cover your ears. Cover your ears, Kelly. We haven't cleared this with Kelly yet.
Oh goodness.
I've already talked to Doug, guys. There's a question here about getting you down to Huntsville. So I've already talked to Doug. We're going to try to get Doug down to the Huntsville Ham Fest because that is at the same time as some big NASA anniversary at the Space Center there. So
yeah, so everybody out there, of course, everybody knows that this July is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And so if you're near a NASA center, and we have 10 major NASA centers throughout the U.S., every center will be having different celebrations and festivities going on around in July around the anniversary of the moon landing. So to include here in Ohio, of course, Wapakoneta, where Neil Armstrong was from, we'll have different festivities as well as all the way through the state of Ohio as well. So great talking to everybody, and everybody be safe out there. It's great talking to you, and I hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Let's try to find some cool air somewhere.
Okay.
And get a cool drink and talk to some people, sign some pictures,
great.
Have fun. Have some fun and get some prizes away.
Great. Thank you, guys.